This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust. I'm Chris Fitch. Awareness of inclusive design has never been higher, but a significant difference exists between praising the approach and actually practicing it. So how do we make the shift from eulogizing about inclusive design to embedding it in our organization? To help answer this question, today's episode takes a deep dive into the ongoing partnership between Tesco Bank and Nile Strategic Design, and in particular, their two-phase project on inclusive design. Here, across two 10-week sprints in 2023 and 2024, they interviewed customers and colleagues, developed design personas, fictional characters, and archetypes, core behavior types, and also produced toolkits and how-to guides. But more importantly, they actively worked on the key challenge of how to embed inclusive design into the Tesco Bank culture, rather than producing resources or information that just sat ignored on an intranet. So to guide us through the quests and challenges of this journey, I spoke with Joe Ellis from Tesco Bank and Catherine Snow from Nile to find out just how they did this. And one last thing before we start. If you like what you hear from Catherine, we've launched a new training course with the Nile team on inclusive design, customer experience and practical outcomes that you can book onto now. If you're interested, check the links that come with this podcast or drop me a message on LinkedIn. Joe and Catherine, welcome to Vulnerability Matters. Absolutely fantastic to have you here. Let's start off. Could you just introduce yourselves and share a bit about your roles? We'll start with Joe.
Yeah, so hi, I'm Joe Ellis. I'm the Senior Vulnerable Customer Manager at Tesco Bank. And I'm also a mental health champion within the bank. And I'm also training to be a CBT therapist and hopefully going to qualify next month of that. So I work at a hospice, actually. I work part-time, so I work at a hospice as well, seeing clients who've been bereaved. So it's all really helpful, and it's all stuff that sort of adds to my experience of customer vulnerability. It's something I'm very passionate about, vulnerable customers and colleagues, because I don't really think you can separate the two. And in my day job, my main areas of focus around vulnerable customer strategy, governance, and how we can really transform our culture of what we do and be inclusive to everybody.
Fantastic. A polymath. I mean, with an introduction, how can you follow that, Catherine? Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I know. What a brilliant introduction. Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much for having us. It's so lovely to be a part of this. So I'm Catherine. I'm a senior service designer and researcher at Nile, and I'm also our inclusive design lead, which means I lead projects, but most of the time I'm bringing people together to make some sort of meaningful change. Often that's in strategy, it's in processes, systems, designing services with communities, and trying to really do things that support people. And I think if I was to boil down my job, really it's about helping organisations rebalance that link between sort of listening and action, and trying to work out how to do that and helping them see things as systems as well. So a big part of my role is helping folks think about inclusion and what that actually looks like in practice, how you enact that with your values and everything. And that's what we did on this project.
Marvellous. And we had the pleasure of having you both at a barnstorming conference back in April that we run. There'll be future conferences as well. But we're talking about inclusive design here. And I wondered, Catherine, staying with you, from a designer's perspective, what does inclusive design actually mean?
This is a really good question. So there's loads of different definitions of inclusive design, but I often borrow one from my friend Leah Lockhart, who says that it's basically design that's care-led. And I really like this because design by default often isn't coming from a place of care. It's coming from a place of maybe productivity, efficiency, maybe it's tech-led, and it's not people-led. And it's not really thinking about how people actually live their lives and the things that actually people need. So inclusive design sort of flips that. It's asks us to kind of start with the people, start with care, start with values, start with people who are often excluded or harmed, and be a bit more conscious of that. And I guess it asks organisations to be more conscious that everyone's circumstances are constantly changing and shifting. So we need to design with and for people who are having changing circumstances, you know, whether that's just feeling a bit stressed, whether that's navigating a health condition, whether that's using a screen reader, or even experiencing something as wide as like discrimination, and actually involving those perspectives and remembering those perspectives exist in every interaction. And I think if we are actually to do that, it's talking about ethics, it's talking about values, it's talking about accessibility, of course, but it's also talking about things like power and transparency and data and just safety to really understand who's benefiting from the designs that we're creating. So I think if I was to summarize it, it is about systems because design is about systems, but it's really about access and understanding and safety and designing products that can support people in real situations.
That's really interesting, Catherine. So, Joe, from your perspective, maybe more operationally, what's your take on inclusive design?
Yeah, so obviously inclusive design, it's a great term, but it's like, how do you take that and bring it into reality and into everything that you're doing? And I think it's so important to make sure that this is embedded right throughout the organization, in the culture, in the training, in absolutely everything that you're doing, but also making sure that you have the right governance processes in place so that we're not sort of thinking about vulnerable customers and inclusivity as an afterthought. It's actually driving our product service journey change, because if we get it right for our vulnerable customers, we're getting it right for everybody.
That's a great segue, because we're going to talk about unpacking and embedding inclusive design into our working culture. Now, the project between Tesco Bank and Nile aim to move just beyond raising awareness. And I think that's really, really key. So it's not just about raising awareness about inclusive design and vulnerability, but embedding it into everyday decisions and processes. So let's try and kind of unpack that. And Catherine, I mean, what does embedding inclusive design actually mean when it comes to kind of everyday practice?
Yeah, so I think you kind of summarized it in your introduction a little bit there, but it's about applying those sort of care-led mindsets, approaches, how you want to define inclusion, to decision making. And I think often there's a bit of a gap in organizations that there's a really positive kind of view of customers and we want to look after them, but actually that feels quite abstract and isn't in practical terms and isn't making its way into the decisions that teams are making. And I guess when I'm talking about decisions, I'm talking about like elements of journeys and prioritizing who is involved, you know, actually those sorts of things on project. So it's also about not viewing inclusion as like a state to reach, because that's also impossible. It's actually then creating the conditions for just inclusion to happen more naturally. So in this project, that was creating some learning tools for teams to just build more understanding, but also creating ways for them to evaluate knowledge, but also designs that they were creating some more reflection space for teams to just get involved in this a bit more. I think it's an approach, and I think that's why I really like that care-led definition, because that's the foundation of it. And so yes, you do need to build that into practices and almost like a system that exists within an organization. And in this project, that was creating tools to kind of enable that system to happen a bit more, and also enable more conversations about this. You know, in some ways, that's step one. So in this case, it was creating some learning tools for teams that also helped build understanding, but also helped to kind of remove some of the fear around this topic. I think that sometimes we see that people are scared of kind of putting a foot wrong or saying the wrong thing. And actually, this is just about embracing difference wherever it is, and taking that approach where we're just going to try and look after each other, both internally, but also our customers. You know, there's nothing to get wrong. It's creating more of a space where people can be a bit more curious and just open to correction as well. So yeah, it was those learning tools. It was reflection spaces for teams. It was also like easier ways for teams to kind of evaluate what they're doing and assess what they're doing and kind of benchmark what they're doing. And just help kind of teams begin to build more of a kind of mindset shift around this, and just think about inclusion as something that's just like a normal part of being a customer facing organization.
Fantastic. And it's an embedding, just like inclusive design is a term that you use quite broadly. So Joe or Catherine, on this one, how did you target and identify which behaviours, which decisions, and which processes within Tesco Bank to really focus on?
Yeah, so we basically started with talking to our colleagues. You know, we all had our own views about what are the right areas to focus on, but we wanted to make sure that we got all of our colleagues' input to make sure that this had the best chance of success. And I'm talking about colleagues from all the different business areas, customer services, product design, customer, et cetera, et cetera. And we asked them what they wanted from it. We found out that colleagues found it very challenging to design for vulnerability just because there's so many different types of vulnerability and different needs. It was completely overwhelming. They also wanted us to keep it simple because everybody's struggling with so many different processes and frameworks, and they didn't want another thing on top of that. But what we did find is that everybody cared about passionately about the customer and wanted to do the right thing. So it was really good to get their voices heard. The other thing is we had a working group in place to develop this toolkit, and we made sure we had representatives from each of the different areas, so like the product design team, customer services, etc., so that they felt completely involved and it was co-created. So they took more ownership for it and more, yeah, were more keen to make sure this landed well with customers as well.
Absolutely. You engage everybody. Those who want to embrace it, the skeptics, the too busies, those who've got, I've got some time in my diary. But kind of, you mentioned the Joe, the toolkit. What was in this toolkit? But what was in it? And what kind of tips and advice have you got on creating these types of toolkits?
Yeah, so the main part of the toolkit and the bit that has absolutely landed best with colleagues are archetypes and personas of real-life vulnerable customers. And how we develop those is by speaking to vulnerable customers, starting with them and understanding what their challenges and needs were. We couldn't always speak to vulnerable customers because there are some situations it just wasn't appropriate. So we supplemented that with speaking to industry experts, to charities, these archetypes and personas just really bring to life the vulnerable customer behaviours and needs in a really accessible and simple way, and we knew we needed simplicity.
Catherine, were there other activities or challenges to overcome that were equally critical to embedding inclusive design into everyday practice?
Yeah, definitely. There's a few things I sort of want to touch on. And I guess there's a couple of other parts of the toolkit that we also haven't spoken about yet. So there were the archetypes and personas, which were kind of that learning, that understanding tool. Then we also had something that we called the standards, which is kind of like a checklist, but all of the needs and expectations and behaviours that are noted in the personas and archetypes are also transferred into the standards. So the standards become this list of almost like everything we know that you need to do to be inclusive for Tesco Bank customers. And we structured and phrased those in a really particular way that teams could pick them up and sort of know the indicative result they were looking for by sort of achieving that bit of a checklist. And we did end up kind of evolving those and iterating those so they link to consumer duty measures as well. So it's all kind of sitting in one central document to be that kind of single source of truth when it comes to inclusive design. So that was the second part, and that was really filling that gap of like assessing and evaluating that teams really needed to be able to embed this. And then we also had this third part, which were how-to guides. So we created a bunch of tools and instructions and guidance really that teams could pick up, and it meant that anyone could use the toolkit. So they could have a look at these how-to guides. It would tell them how to run a workshop using archetypes, how to journey map using archetypes, ways to talk about inclusion with their team, for example, and reflective questions. And it was all contained in these how-to guides. So it just meant that the toolkit was no longer the property of the design team or vulnerable customers team. It was something that anyone in the organization could pick up. And I think having those how-to guides addressed one of the really big challenges, which was getting this out and available to everyone, and not just something that they can read, but actually something they can use. So hopefully that gives an overview of the three key parts of the toolkit, and they all helped us address different challenges. So as we've already spoken about, the archetypes and personas were really that learning piece. But I think the sort of hidden challenge with that is creating the time for teams to learn and learn together. So that's something that Joe and her team have really prioritized, and I think is something that is kind of an ongoing thing at Tesco Bank, is just making the time for people to get to use these calls, get to talk about them, get to reflect on them in different ways. So I think that's really key. And related to that is that this is always going to be a sort of smaller system in a bigger system of an organization, you know, when you're trying to make change, and just accepting that it's going to take a little while and let it naturally flow into things and help people identify other areas that can be used. And I think that's definitely like a stage that the toolkit's in now.
Yeah, I just wanted to add on the timeline. So, I mean, however we do this, and we are trying to streamline it and add it to existing processes, etc., there is still going to be a time element to this if we're going to do it properly, and we can't avoid that. So, but it's about helping people realise that actually this is a great thing for our colleagues. So having the chance to spend focused time on our customers, we've only seen positive impact of that. In terms of how engaged colleagues feel in what they're doing, it gives them a reason to come to work if they understand that they're helping our customers and making things better. So we found that it's really increased collaboration between departments because we get different teams together and people are more focused on the same goal, which is our customer, which is what we're essentially all here for.
Fantastic. And it's great to have these narrative accounts of the impact and some of the outputs. I just wonder, Catherine, if you had some thoughts about measuring this type of change, being able to track whether the approach is making a tangible difference and a tangible difference to customer outcomes?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's maybe different layers to it. I think there is obviously that customer focused side, which organizations will measure in their own way anyway, whether that's things like complaints, scoring experience, or even actually customer numbers, of course, is sort of a way of seeing the success of this. But then there is that more internal focused layer of just that kind of cultural change and how that's happening, and if that's happening. And that is harder to measure, but I think we see it through things like conversations, we see it through designs created, and we see it through what people are starting to prioritize in the way that they design and speak with each other. And I think, although that's maybe harder to tangibly track, you can see it implicitly, and I think we have seen that at Tesco Bank.
Joe, you were talking about that impact, about colleagues coming in feeling equipped and having maybe some extra energy or pep in their step to do all this. What other concrete impacts can you see that the work has had, this inclusive design work has had on vulnerability?
Definitely previously, and I think I mentioned this before, there was this perception that, well, there was people didn't really understand what our vulnerable customers looked like, and there was a perception it was only impacting a very small number of customers. And I think that people's eyes have really been opened to actually this is something that can affect anyone, that might affect me or my family members. And so it's been transformational in that respect, and we've had really positive feedback on that. It's also really helped us deliver some of the change that we might have struggled with previously. So some of the change that we want to make, and people listening will appreciate this, you know, we're competing with things that have got massive P&L benefits. It's difficult to always put some of the customer vulnerable customer work as mandatory, because the guidance is quite loose on that. So it's how do you sort of get things over the line and get approval for initiatives that we know are going to benefit customers.
Fantastic. Right, I'm going to give you both a googly here. We've talked in very positive terms about inclusive design. You never hear anyone bad-mouthing inclusive design. Everyone thinks it's fabulous as a concept. But recent FCA research found that while 85% of firms that they surveyed, I think it was over 700 firms, said they're taking significant action on vulnerability in service and product design, only 29% reported testing the impact of their designs with vulnerable customers. And this might actually explain why 40 to 65%, depending on the metric you take, of vulnerable customers report that the products they have don't meet their needs. So I don't know who's going to take this one. How has your work approached and overcome this testing gap?
I mean, what I was saying earlier, and Catherine, you might want to come in as well, but what I was saying earlier is we're not always going to be able to test with vulnerable customers. there are some vulnerable customer groups where, you know, it wouldn't be appropriate to test with them. So we already know we have a limitation in that. But that's where the toolkit is really good as an extra layer that goes over all the research we're doing to make sure that we're considering these groups and that they have a voice. But that said, we do make sure that we build, you know, research into our product design and journey design, etc. We have customer panels. We have something called a Customer Wednesday, where every fortnight, and Niall help us with this, we speak to customers and ask them, you know, about various different change that we're bringing in. And we always make sure we have vulnerable customer recruitment. And then we have our NPS survey. We have questions about vulnerability in that, so we're able to understand their experience. Mm. But there's definitely always more that we can do and want to do in terms of understanding our vulnerable customers. And we would love to do more sort of direct research with those customers as well.
Absolutely. And I think you're wise to kind of just critically reflect on that 29%. Sometimes you can't test. And sometimes you will need these archetypes and personas. Catherine, anything you wanted to add in there?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I think this is a really important one. I think there's maybe two sides of this for me. I think the first one is just how we're involving people with lived experience and what we're doing with that data, and just important practicalities of that process. Like, I think it's brilliant that more people are doing research, but there's some things in there that are really important, and we don't want to categorize people by doing this research. You know, that's really against inclusion. So things like screeners, things like research repositories, actually the language that we're using in these spaces is really important to help people you know, be able to self-identify, self-define what they feel they actually are and the circumstances they're going through. And I wonder if we're just missing the mark a little bit with that and whether that's affecting results. And then the second one for me is just the strategies that organizations have to action these changes. I think when we talk about inclusion, we can overcomplicate it a little bit, and you can think that everyone has unique needs, so then we need to design billions of different things or make services super adaptable. And it's often the case is much simpler than that. You know, it's about access, it's about understanding, it's about safety, and actually thinking of it in those terms. And I often think we put too much onus on the customers. We talk about customer needs, but we don't talk about organizational barriers enough. So can you flip it around and think about the barriers you are putting up as an organization, which are affecting people? And can you address those barriers and maybe measure those barriers and scope projects to those barriers rather than just people's needs? And it's potentially a much more impactful and effective way of going about this problem.
If we had to leave now, we're very lucky that the Money Advice Trust and Noel are working together. So if you've really enjoyed listening to Catherine and the work they've done with Tesco Bank, you can come along and actually meet Catherine and colleagues on the course we're running. But give us one final message about how to embed inclusive design effectively. Starting with you, Catherine, and then Joe will give you the last word.
Yeah, so I think for me, it would be maybe to stop talking about inclusion and instead talk about how we create the conditions for it. So what learning tools do your team need? But also thinking about some of these wider questions of like, who's involved in project scoping? How are you engaging with communities? What are your project timelines? And how is that actually limiting what you can do with some of the data that you collect? And I think it's really important also to look beyond maybe some of the more established terms in this area. So Consumer Duty has really brought the term vulnerability to the fore, and obviously we've had so many guidelines around accessibility before, and those are both really good and really helpful, but inclusion is wider than that. And I think it's really important not to forget you know, what's shaping people's experiences, who's benefited, who's left out, and have conversations about that as well as these terms which we've got more used to.
Perfect. Jo?
Yes, I think my final words would be keep going. It is really hard and challenging at times to work in the vulnerable customer space. There's so many other things the business wants to do, and it can be challenging to get to do everything you would like to do. But I just think if we take action each day to do something to create value for our vulnerable customers, it's actually amazing what a difference you can make over time.
Fantastic. Joe, Catherine, thank you very much.
And that was Joe Ellis from Tesco Bank and Catherine Snow from Nile, sharing just how inclusive design can move from a bold ambition to something that's truly embedded in daily practice. If you want to learn more about inclusive design, of course, there's no better way than to sign up for our brand new course with Niall on design, customer experience and practical outcomes. Just check the podcast links or head over to the Money Advice Trust website for more information. And that's about it. So until next time, friends, stay inclusive. Be sure to polish up your archetypes. And most importantly, keep on remembering that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was produced by Mandy McGreevy and Phil King and brought to you by the Money Advice Trust.